Hang me, oh, hang me. I'll be dead and gone. Hang me, oh, hang me. I'll be dead and gone. Wouldn't mind the hanging, but the laying in the grave so long. Poor boys have been all around this world.
Hello, looters. Welcome to the Movie Loot, the podcast where we share the best, greatest, most entertaining, and or weirdest film loot you could find. My name is Carlo, and we'll be sharing the loot today. We're on episode 62, the May Loot. After an unintended, unplanned, sort of hiatus, our last episode came out about a month ago, but it's been a busy month personally and at work. A lot of stuff going on in my life, a lot of personal stuff, and I really want to thank Andres from Latin Jukebox, Tom, Ian from Best Film Ever, Keram, Sylvie, Darren Lomberg from Nostalgia Cast, Tim Dougherty, and my friend Alex, all of which reached out and offered their support via DM, but also many others who replied on Twitter. A lot of people like to rant about the toxicity of film Twitter, but I always say it all depends on who you surround yourself with. I'm grateful for most of the interactions I have on Twitter, so thanks to everybody. But the show must go on. Another reason why the hiatus came like a charm was that April and the beginning of May were busy as hell for me and the podcast. I mean, only during those months, I was a guest on 7 different podcasts. That's the same amount of guest spots I had last year. I was on the Cinematic Council of Podcasts led by Best Film Ever. I was in 2 episodes of the Film Effect podcast, one of them talking about Jordan Peele's Us. I was with Frank Mendoza at Silver Screeners to talk about The Godfather. I was at Defining Disney talking about the many adventures of Winnie the Pooh. All of those episodes are already out. I also recorded an episode of the Jacked Up Review Show talking about Season 7 and 8 of 24. And I recorded with Stu for Sewer Order, both episodes still pending. So make sure you check those out if you want to hear me babble on. Also, during the last week of April and the first week of May, I released 5 episodes pretty much back-to-back-to-back, and that was a lot to edit. We released episode 59, The Nostalgic Loot, with Darren Lomberg, where we talked about nostalgia in films, pros and cons, and how to embrace films we're nostalgic about. And following up on that nostalgia, we also released special episode 11, where I analyze one scene from Transformers the movie. Then we released episode 60, The April Loot, where I talk about all the films I saw in April while focusing on 1949's The Heiress, an excellent drama with a riveting performance from Olivia de Havilland. Then for Star Wars Day, we released episode 61, The Star Wars Loot, with Ethan from Best Film Ever as a guest. We talk about the iconic sci-fi franchise, its strengths and flaws, and our favorite characters and scenes from each trilogy. Finally, on Friday the 13th, me and Josh from Your Next Favorite Movie released a bonus episode on the iconic horror franchise from Jason Voorhees. We dive into each film of the series, shared our thoughts on them, talk about our favorite kills, and close with our ranking of the whole franchise. So that was a whole lot. Pretty much those episodes came one behind the other, and maybe because of that huge output, we hit the Good Pods chart in the beginning of May. We charted at number 2 in the top 100 film interviews chart for both regular and indie podcasts, and we charted at number 32 in the top 100 indie film reviews chart. So we're thankful for the great feedback, but I was also really thankful that I could breathe a little, at least from the podcast, during the second half of May. To close out this intro, I want to give some shout-outs to, again, Latin Jukebox at Rocola de Rolo, who said, "Just listen to the Heiress episode from the Movie Loot. Great set of movies, including drama, horror, suspense, and action. 5 stars in Good Pods and Pod Chaser." Tim Dougherty also got back to us after listening to the Star Wars episode and said, "Glad my thesis made for the introduction to your loot segment. Nice job by both of you on this one. Star Wars is endlessly discussable, of course, especially for all guys like me who saw the original in the theaters." So thanks to everybody that has listened, that has reached out, that has stuck with us through this brief wait, and now we're back for more. Episode 62, The May Loot. Let's talk about what we saw that month, and like I've been doing this past months, aside of talking about all the films I saw, I like to put the spotlight on one of the best films I saw that month. And I was struggling in trying to choose what film to focus on because I really saw a bunch of great films. And I narrowed it down to two, Inside Llewyn Davis or Five Easy Pieces. Two very similar films, actually, about two men living with no direction and trying to find themselves. Both are great, but I think I would give a very slight edge to Inside Llewyn Davis. So let's talk about that.
What'd you say you played?
Folk songs.
Folk songs. Solo act?
No, I had a partner.
Threw himself off the George Washington Bridge.
George Washington Bridge? You throw yourself off the Brooklyn Bridge. Traditionally, George Washington Bridge. Who does that?
If I had wings, I'd know where it's done. I'd fly the river.
Explain the cat.
What's its name?
I don't know.
It's the Gorfine's cat.
It slipped out and I don't have the key.
My honey, fare thee well.
Don't tell Jim.
Oh!
Obviously.
Well, I had a man, strong and tall. He moved his body like a cannonball. Well, fare thee well.
Mel, there was no advance on my solo record.
There's gotta be some royalty.
For Christ's sake, it's cold out. I don't even have a winter coat.
You're kidding me.
Ain't this kid?
No, no.
I remember one evening in the pouring rain and in my heart.
Do you ever think about the future at all?
You mean like flying cars? Hotels on the moon? Tang?
I want you to leave. Get out of here.
Danny, your uncle's a bad man.
Okay.
So show us a bird.
Interested in gigging here.
Okay, let's hear something.
You don't want to hear the record?
Why should I? You're here. Play me something. Play me something from Inside Llewyn Davis.
Fairly well.
Okay.
Inside Llewyn Davis is a 2013 film written, directed, produced, and edited by Joel and Ethan Coyne. Wikipedia describes it as a period black comedy musical drama. I wouldn't really call it a comedy, but it has the typical dark humor of the Coens, so I really can't fault anyone from labeling it as such. The film follows the titular character, played by Oscar Isaac, an aspiring folk singer struggling to get by as a solo act after the death of his partner. Davis survives by performing small gigs while cycling through the houses of various friends and acquaintances to sleep in. Although the film is an original work, there are elements of the life of folk singer Dave Van Ronk in it. I think that what struck me the most about the film was its cyclical aspect and the symbolism of that, with some events repeating themselves with sometimes similar, sometimes very different results, but most of the time signifying the futility in Davis' efforts to attain success. There is a certain routine of him being stuck in a rut while playing cheap gigs, asking a friend to sleep in, rinse and repeat, trying to survive one day at a time while expecting that miraculous moment of success to come and push him off the wheel. I think the better example of this is in the two scenes that bookend the film, both of which feature Davis singing two different songs at the Gaslight Cafe in Greenwich Village, and there is something that happens afterwards that makes the character feel like Sisyphus, the character from Greek mythology that is forced to spend eternity rolling a boulder up a hill only to have it roll back down every time. And there is much you can take from that, in that, first, neither Sisyphus nor Davis are willing or able to step back and take a different approach to their predicament. They're stuck doing the same thing again and again and again, but there is also something to the fact that Davis' woes are not entirely his fault. And this is something that is common with the Coens in how fate plays a major role in the things that happen to our characters. Regardless of what you do, fate is going to play its hand. There is a cynical aura around some of the things that happen to Davis, even when he does try to step aside and do something different, which again pushes him back to the same cycle, back into the wheel, and I really like that, as depressing as it might be. My friend Frank Mendoza at Film Buff 1974 said, "Inside Llewyn Davis is severely underrated. Oscar Isaac nailed the tough job of playing a narcissist that you hate rooting for, even though you eventually do." And I totally agree. Isaac is phenomenal in the role. His performance walks a fine line between charisma, charm, and bitterness, frustration. He doesn't play Davis to the audience, but actually as a real man full of talent, but also full of flaws, insecurities, and anger. For all his artistry and talent, he just can't help but burn bridges all around him, which again leaves him trapped with the same things happening to him over and over. So, if you want to check this out, Inside Llewyn Davis is currently streaming free on Prime. So, if you like good films, but especially if you like the Coens, make sure you check it out because this one gets the recognition of being the loot of the month. But on to the rest of the loot, shall we?
A film with the number 5 in its title.
For this category, I went with 1970's Five Easy Pieces, which I already mentioned. This film follows Bobby Dupea, played by Jack Nicholson, a former child piano prodigy that has chosen to get away from that life and instead lives as a blue-collar oil rig worker. However, his past comes back to haunt him when he finds out that his father, a musical genius himself, is dying, forcing him to go back to the things he has tried so hard to get away from. I really, really enjoyed this and the way it portrays the burden of expectations that's on Bobby's shoulders, a burden he just doesn't want or care about. When the film starts, we see Dupea's regular life at the oil rigs, but as the film progresses, director Bob Rafelson reveals little tidbits about his past life. Some things we see, others we can infer, which is great. There's not a big expository dump, and I like that. But we still get glimpses of who he was. For example, there's a scene where he stumbles upon a piano on a moving truck in the middle of a traffic jam, and in the middle of his anger for the traffic, he just gets on and starts playing in an almost manic outpour. You can contrast this with the second moment we see him play, which is later in the film when he's at his childhood home, a moment where he seems to be more in control, and yet he openly dismisses and rejects what he does. One of the main reasons why this film works so well is Nicholson. The way he transmits those two angles of Bobby Dupea, the complexities and layers beneath, is perfection. I mean, it's not far from what he usually plays, cynical and bitter, but he does it so well, and when the last act comes and he drops his defenses, you can see the subtlety and nuance in the character. My friend Sylvie at Sly_Wit said, "Love Five Easy Pieces, which I just saw for the first time a few years ago. I avoided it for the longest time simply based on the dinner scene everyone has seen from it, which never really seemed interesting or funny to me. But that scene is so not the rest of this movie." And my friend Jerry Sarabia, Jerry at the Movie, said, "Five Easy Pieces is heartbreaking in terms of loss of familial communication. The ending is apropos." So this is another film I strongly recommend. If you want to check it out, Five Easy Pieces is streaming free on HBO Max.
A film with a bird's name in its title.
For this category, I went with a film that ended up being my Puerto Rican connection. That's right, I went 100% Boricua with this one, and saw a Puerto Rican film called Antes que Cante el Gallo, Before the Rooster Crows, from 2016. The film is directed by Ari Manuel Cruz and written by Kisha Tiquina Burgos, who also has a small role in the film. For context, the rooster crowing is a slang term here in Puerto Rico for a girl's first period, hence her entrance into womanhood and therefore her sexual awakening. So the film follows Carmine, played by Miranda Purcell, as she struggles with this while living with her strict grandmother, played by Cordelia Gonzalez. To complicate things, her mother is moving to the US looking for a better job, and her father, Ruben, played by José Eugenio Hernández, has returned home after a prison sentence. I was really surprised by this film. The direction by Ari Manuel Cruz is pretty good, and the cinematography by Santiago Marie Bennett is impeccable. There is great shot composition, and the overall camera movement is solid. They also make great use of the country landscape of the island, since the film is set in Barranquitas, which is a small town towards the center of the island. The thing is that the film feels real. It feels genuine and from here. But as good as all of that is, the best things are the performances and the story. Both Purcell and Hernandez are great. For someone as young as she is, Purcell really succeeds conveying all the emotional storm inside of Carmen. She's angry, frustrated, sad, confused, wanting, sometimes all at the same time. Meanwhile, Hernandez's performance walks a fine line between charm and threat. You're never sure how to feel about him. And one of the most interesting things about the film is that complex relationship between both, something that isn't even fully explored, but I like that it is there. There are many things that aren't said, and yet you can feel them around the characters. Other than that, there are some plot points that are left hanging, but overall this was a great story about a young woman learning to move past abandonment and growing up to find her own. If you are interested, Antes que cante el gallo is streaming free on Tubi, so check it out.
A film from Frank Capra.
Frank Capra was born in May 18, so I set out to watch one of his films. I had already seen It's a Wonderful Life and Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, although it's been a while for both. But anyway, I went with one that has been recommended to me several times, 1934's It Happened One Night. Winner of the coveted Big Five, that's Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actress, Best Actor, and Best Screenplay, the film follows Ellie Andrews, played by Claudette Colbert, the daughter of a wealthy businessman that finds herself trapped by the expectations and appearances of her upbringing, and ends up eloping with a renowned pilot and alleged gold digger. As her father is trying to have her marriage annulled, she escapes and takes a bus to reunite with her husband, only to meet Peter Warren, played by Clark Gable, a cynical reporter that sees the opportunity for a story but ends up falling for her instead. My friend Sylvie reminded me that she had mentioned this film as one of her favorite rom-coms for our rom-com loot in February and as one of her favorite Best Picture winners in our Oscar loot last year. Frank Mendoza said It Happened One Night was the blueprint for screwball comedy. Lots of dated elements and not necessarily laugh-out-loud funny, but entertaining and amusing. And Jerry Sarabia said It Happened One Night, a true romantic comedy from the heart. So obviously there's a reputation that precedes it, but I'm happy to say that it's well-deserved. The dialogue is witty, performances are solid, and the chemistry between Gable and Colbert is excellent. Sure, there are things that are obviously dated and haven't aged well. I mean, it's 1934, but it makes up for it with great banter between the two leads and a variety of memorable sequences and bits that keep the film moving at a nice pace. So if you like old Hollywood or just fun rom-coms, this one's strongly recommended. It's available for rent on most streaming platforms.
A film from the They Shoot Pictures Don't They 1000 Greatest Films list whose ranking includes the number 5.
For this category, I went with Mad Max 2, The Road Warrior. Jerry Sarabia said Road Warrior is one of the best sequels ever made. Tim Dougherty at Tim_Dougherty said what Jerry said on Mad Max 2. It also might be the first sequel I saw before the original. Practically speaking, I view Road Warrior as the original and Mad Max as a low-budget prequel. It's the quintessential post-apocalyptic theme movie. And when I said I was watching this, my friend Justin at KundaliniHand73 said, better late than never. I don't keep top 10 lists because I drive myself crazy trying to winnow things down, but this would easily be in my top 10 all-time favorite movies. So this is yet another one that comes with a huge baggage of expectations, and yet another one that really delivered on that. The film picks up right where the first one ended. There's even a quick recap of it with our detached and hardened hero Max Rokatansky, played by Mel Gibson, roaming the desert wasteland for fuel. When he finds an abandoned oil refinery, he has to defend a group of settlers from a gang of violent bikers led by Lord Humongous. First, can we acknowledge that Lord Humongous is a hilarious name? Anyway, this is a franchise that has eluded me. I ended up seeing the first one back in 2016, which was a solid effort, but far from a masterpiece. But with that foundation established, this one ends up being a simple but really good action film. What makes it work is mostly Gibson's rough and tough persona. He has that edge, but still has a lot of charisma underneath it all. George Miller's direction is also very skilled as he handles some great set pieces and chase sequences. With all that and a 90-plus minute runtime, it's like a perfect combination. I also love the aesthetics of it, which makes almost every character jump at you in some way. Maybe it's the mohawk, maybe it's a mask, maybe it's the clothes, but it also helps make the film more memorable. If you were like me and you haven't seen this, it is streaming free on HBO Max. Haha, Max.
A film from Ecuador.
Ecuador celebrated the Battle of Pichincha Day on May 24. This is a holiday that commemorates the battle that secured the independence of the nation in 1822. So, of course, I set out to watch a film from there. And I went with one from 1999 called Ratas, Ratones, Rateros, or simply Rodents in English. This film follows Angel, played by Carlos Valencia, a criminal and ex-convict that is on the run from a loan shark and seeks refuge with his cousin, Salvador, played by Marco Bustos, a young petty thief himself that idolizes him. As they try to stay ahead of the hitmen that are chasing Angel, Salvador finds himself more embroiled in his cousin's lifestyle. Apparently, this film was the one that put Ecuadorian films on the map, gave some notoriety to their film industry. It was nominated for a Spanish Goya Award and is quite revered as far as I found out, and with reason. You can say it follows a similar template to many American crime films of the era, with fast-paced direction and editing and morally ambiguous characters, but it still manages to feel fresh enough and very much of its place. It is directed by Sebastián Cordero, and he does a pretty good job with it. His direction is confident, and the script, although a bit messy at times with some subplots that don't lead anywhere, there are still enough interesting strands to keep us engaged. But what puts the film above others to me is Valencia's performance. He has such a charismatic persona, exuding both threat but also a magnetism that makes you understand why Salvador idolizes him. Bustos' performance is not at the same level, but he's playing the more straight man. He's not supposed to be as captivating as Angel, but he still does it pretty well. There are still some spotty performances in the supporting cast, but not many. Acting is pretty good overall, and there are some subplots that feel unnecessary, and the conclusion wasn't as satisfying as I would have expected, but this was still a surprisingly solid debut by Cordero and a pretty good crime film on its own.
A film from the 1950s.
For this category, I went with 1950s Winchester 73. The film is set shortly after Custer's last stand in the 19th century, and it follows Lynn McAdam, played by James Stewart, a cowboy determined to find a man called Dutch Henry Brown, played by Stephen McNally, for unspecified reasons. When he finds him in Dutch City, Kansas, they are unable to fight, but both enter a competition to win one of the coveted titular rifles. The possession of it becomes the driving force of the plot as the rifle passes through different owners as the film progresses. So the film kind of follows the rifle more than it follows McAdam, actually. But anyway, it was an unfortunate coincidence, perhaps, that I ended up seeing this shortly after the tragic shooting in Uvalde, Texas. And although I tried my best to separate the film from what had just happened, I couldn't help but think of how much American gun culture and the admiration or obsession for a specific weapon are at the center of so many tragedies that we've witnessed these days. In this case, it's not much the gun. The gun passes through probably five or six owners, but it's rather the improper use of it which becomes a sort of moral barometer of the characters. At one point, McAdam trades barbs with Brown by implying that he used a gun to shoot someone in the back, whereas McAdam's best friend warns him at some point about getting too obsessed with capturing and killing Brown. But trying to put that aside, there are certainly interesting little stories in every pit stop that the gun gets. There's one in particular that I really enjoyed, when a sly gun trader called Joe Lamont, played by John McIntyre, gets a hold of the gun. He's so weaselly and smart that I love the scenes with him. Unfortunately, the ending pushes away a lot of the moral dilemmas that the film hints at in favor of traditional shootouts. Also, there is a romantic relationship between Stewart and Shelley Winters, which was unnecessary, but Anthony Mann's direction is pretty good and most of the performances are great. It is always good to see Stewart play a morally conflicted character, and this is an example of it. If we want to check it out, Winchester 73 is streaming free on Stars.
A film mostly set on a train.
National Train Day was May 13, so I was looking for a film set on a train. I went with 1985's Runaway Train. The film follows Manny, played by John Boyd, a dangerous convict at a secluded maximum security prison in Alaska. He manages to escape with the help of Buck, played by Eric Roberts, a young, impressionable prisoner who idolizes him. And after hopping on a nearby train, they realize that the locomotive is on the loose. Meanwhile, the ruthless prison warden, played by John P. Ryan, is hot on their trail. This is an interesting film because it is packaged and marketed as an action thriller, and it is, but still, there is something a bit more complex under the surface. There are themes of obsession, loyalty, humanity, and freedom lurking underneath the roar of the locomotive. Manny is a complicated character to root for, and I like how the film focuses on his psyche as much as it does on the action set pieces. And speaking of the action set pieces, they are pretty good. And director Andrei Konchalovsky does a great job with them. I mean, this is pre-CGI, so all the shots of the train are practical and very impressive indeed. Things do go a bit overboard in the last act. Robert's performance is spotty, and the inclusion of a female employee, played by Rebecca De Mornay, that's trapped with them on the train, felt forced. But what the film does well, it does incredibly well. So much like the proverbial train wreck, it is hard to look away. If you're interested, Runaway Train is streaming free on HBO Max.
A fantasy film.
For this category, I went with Zack Snyder's Man of Steel. I saw this one in preparation for a guest appearance at Stu World Order, hosted by my friend Stu, and that episode is coming up probably next month. My friend Jerry Sarabia said, Man of Steel honors Superman as a truly complicated hero. I might agree to some extent, but for my final thoughts, stay tuned and alert for Stu's podcast and check out my episode with him.
A film about mothers.
Finally, I also saw a couple of shorts, two of them in honor of Mother's Day, and they couldn't be more different. The first one I saw is called Where You Are from 2016. It is directed by Graham Parks and follows Jen, played by Sarah Burns, a mother who is busy folding clothes when her young kid James, played by Hudson West, asks her to play hide and seek. But when he actually disappears, Jen is taken in a surreal journey through time to find him. He journeys seamlessly through different phases in James' life, from the rebellious teenage years to his eventual adulthood and departure from the nest, so to speak, circling back to his playful childhood. This one really got to me. Parks takes a simple premise, a game of hide and seek and a missing son, and uses some clever direction to take us on this journey that is not so much about finding James, but more about realizing that we just can't keep our eyes on our children every time. And we just can't see where they're going every single time. And I mean, not only when they're kids, but as they grow up and start becoming more independent. As a relatively newbie father struggling with this daunting task, it was a sort of shake-up that there is only so much we can control, and that despite things being crazy at times, somehow things can work out in the end. The other one I saw was called The Mother from 2021. It follows Lucy, played by Ning Lu, a young independent woman surprised when her mother, played by Crystal Winks, arrives at her home asking to stay for a while. Believing she has had a fight with her father, Lucy reluctantly agrees but tries her best not to let her mother interfere with her social life and everyday routine. This is an interesting premise and it has a decidedly emotional story. Unfortunately, the performances feel forced and the whole execution is a bit in your face. There is a revelation towards the end that is supposed to pack a punch, but it just didn't fully work for me. Still, I can see how it might work with some, so maybe you can give it a chance. The Mother was directed by Blake Ritter and can be found anywhere on the internet. Finally, my final watch of the month was yet another short called Malice in Wonderland from 1982. Directed by Vince Collins, it is animated and a loose adaptation of Lewis Carroll's iconic novel Alice's Adventure in Wonderland. The short takes the idea of the narrative of the novel and presents them through a series of bizarre, trippy, and sexually charged visuals and sounds that include fluids, appendages, bulbas, screams, and laser sounds. The animation style is very aggressive and in-your-face with a non-stop flow, bordering closely on sensory overload, but there is still a hypnotizing quality to it. It is also nice how Collins and graphic designer Miwako take different elements from Carroll's story, like the Cheshire Cat, the Queen of Hearts, the Rabbit, and interpret them in their own way. So if you're really into trippy and visually arresting experiences, then give this a shot. So, that was my May Loot. If you like films about lonely men trying to find themselves and get through life, check out Inside Llewyn Davis, check out Five Easy Pieces. But also check out the other great films I saw, especially It Happened One Night, Antes Que Cante el Gallo, and Mad Max 2, among many others. If you do catch up with any of them, let me know via Twitter, at TiffCGT or at TMML2021. We love to hear back from people that are inspired to check out a film because of the show. Now that June is already underway, halfway through actually, this is what I will try to watch this month. A film with the number 6 in its title. A film that starts with the letters K or L. A film from the They Shoot Pictures Don't They 1000 Greatest Pictures list, whose number includes the number 6. A film from the 1960s. A horror film, a film with the word summer in its title, a film about LGBTQ lifestyles, a film about fathers, a film from Iceland, and a film from Sidney Lumet. So that's it for the Movie Loot. Thanks to everybody for listening and for holding out for us through this brief hiatus. Remember that you can find the podcast on every podcasting platform, and if you do listen to us, share the link, and if you can leave us a review, better yet, make it a 5-star review, please. Also, feel free to support us via our Ko-fi page, which you can find in our link tree on our Twitter bio. For now, this is all I got.
So it's never new and it never gets old and it's a folk song. All right, one more before I go.
If I had wings.